Nerd Soul.
Lay Ill Kid at One Youngster holding it down, bringing that street geek and nerd soul. What is up, my people, today all year? Coming with another wonderful episode of Specials, and we talking about Star Wars. Nah, all right, look, just forget all that. Look, we ain't by ourselves. It's not just me. I got a special, he's still a special guest, but you know him, you love him. Jay Shearer of the Story Geeks is with us tonight, or I guess today, or maybe this morning, whenever you listen to this. Anyway, we wanted to get together and talk about some Star Wars because there is a lot going on in general in that galaxy far, far away. I mean, to put it lightly, Star Wars fans is eating in these streets, all right? We got stuff for the little guys. We got Young Jedi Adventures, all right? That's some, like, Disney Junior stuff. Then we got the stuff for, you know, the intermediate kids, you know, like older kids, you know what I'm saying, with Bad Batch. And, you know, the big kids, too, because Bad Batch is definitely coming through. It's holding it down. Then we got all kinds of trailers from Ahsoka and all that from Star Wars Celebration. And Mandalorian is coming to a close now. I would be remiss to come into the finale of Mandalorian Season 3 and not have the young man known as Jay Shearer on to spread some thoughts. This season, and especially since we know we're going into like a movie that's going to dovetail all these series together, I am extremely excited about the visuals that we're getting, about, you know, the creative people that are around it, like Rick Famuyiwa, Bryce Dallas Howard, Dave Filoni, of course. You know what I mean? You can't ask for a better cast of characters. I mean, you even got your boy from Iron Man, you know what I'm saying? You got him holding down. I mean, I can't remember his name, but y'all will put it in the comments. I'll be like, yo, you forgot his name. But anyway, I love that we've got so much going on with Moff Gideon, with the Shadow Council, with the New Republic, with Mandalorian culture as a whole. We are doing a great job of broadening the lore of Star Wars. You know, seeing a probe droid again was like, oh snap, like y'all, first, it's crazy to even have a probe droid because those were only known to be used, of course, by the Empire. So it's like, yo, are you sure you want to roll around with one of these things? Because it's not, you know, super safe for you to just be using this. You know what I'm saying? It's not just super safe for you to be, you know, talking to this thing, especially when you're supposed to be kind of like the renewed, rehabilitated lady, you know, for the New Republic. But I love the play that we're getting from this, like, triple spy, triple agent. There's also theories about the armorer, but seeing how Moff Gideon is addressing everyone in the council is just... It's beautiful, man, to see these internal politics. And this is what I was trying to tell people a long time ago, man. Politics is mad exciting. Politics is important. Politics is interesting. But I do think that the prequels probably could have took a page out of Gundam's book. Like, I mean, Gundam is basically a military sci-fi with, you know, political, you know, coups and attacks and aggression, kind of like dressed on top of it. But with this and Mandalorian, we are getting enough energy in front of us each and every episode to just enjoy from top to bottom, front to back, and I love it.
Here are some general thoughts on the state of Star Wars, and I don't know, maybe where I think some things could be headed, some things that I think they should focus on. We just had Star Wars Celebration. Star Wars Celebration was probably one of the strangest events that we've seen in recent years because there's no slate of movies really that's out there, but there've been dozens of properties that have been announced. I say dozens, over 12, let's put it that way. Things that were announced, projects that were announced, especially films, that never came to be. Patty Jenkins film, not happening. Rian Johnson trilogy, not happening. Taika Waititi film, maybe in development, but we're not really sure. And there's a whole list of them. There was the Benioff and Weiss. Those are the Game of Thrones directors. They had a Star Wars thing going on at one time. I think it was probably a TV show, not a movie, but I don't know. And then they come out at Star Wars Celebration and say, we're going to have a Rey film. We're going to have a Filoni film that wraps up the Mandoverse, whatever the Mandoverse is. I'm assuming that's Mandalorian, Ahsoka, Book of Boba Fett. I don't think that includes Andor for any reason. And then we were also going to have another film from James Mangold that happens even prior to the Old Republic. And I mean, Star Wars can only tell me that those things are going to happen so many times before I can't trust them anymore, because none of the things that they're promising in the past are actually coming to fruition. And in this case, I think that that's still true, because I don't see any of these things. Maybe Mangold gets his film. Maybe Filoni gets his film. I have to question Lucasfilm leadership at this point. I've been a Kathleen Kennedy defender for a really long period of time, and I am not part of the fandom menace, nor do I believe that a lot of those takes are accurate. However, you have to have a vision for where Star Wars is going, and you have to be able to communicate that vision effectively, and it just doesn't feel like that exists right now at all. And so I think Kennedy was under a lot of pressure, because I think prior to the pandemic, Disney Plus was going to be a huge thing. They needed a lot of content for Disney Plus. They needed a lot of new content for Disney Plus. And so Kathleen Kennedy basically said, all right, we'll start developing TV shows. She's even admitted that at Celebration that she wasn't like a TV expert. She brings on Jon Favreau. He's not a TV expert either. Filoni's done some TV stuff because he did the Clone Wars. So they all worked together to kind of come up with some of these things that we've seen from Star Wars recently. And I think that hurt them on the movie side. I'm not sure why they stopped making films on the movie side, but they clearly didn't have a good vision for the sequel trilogy, because Rian Johnson and J.J. Abrams were basically fighting over concepts in that trilogy. So nobody had a clear vision for what that was going to be. So her coming out and saying, here are the new three films that we're gonna make, and she even said something like one of the films is going to go into production in like 6 weeks, and there's no script for it. And as a screenwriter, I can tell you right now that if you told me I had 6 weeks to write a script, I cannot guarantee you anything that looks like a great script in 6 weeks. And I don't know very many writers who can. Usually you're talking like 3 to 6 months, and even that is like a fast timeline. So I'm not too sure that I can get excited about the movies that were announced. I do like James Mangold. I am looking forward to the Lucasfilm movie, the Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny that James Mangold is working on. I think it's going to be a really great movie. I think there's multiple pieces of evidence that point to that, despite some people, particularly the Phantom Menace, who are claiming that that's not going to be a good movie. I think it is going to be a good movie. James Mangold has a ton of good movies under his belt, and they're even being so bold as to showcase these films or Dial of Destiny at some film festivals, which I think means that they have a high degree of confidence in Dial of Destiny. So I'm looking forward to that. Can't look forward to the Lucasfilm announcements of Star Wars films, because I just don't know that those are going to happen. If we see Kathleen Kennedy transition out of her role at Lucasfilm, then it's almost for sure that those films won't happen, unless she greenlights them so fast that they're already in development. But you know, we might see a transition from Kathleen Kennedy this year, even, or next year. I don't know how far she can get with those films before that transition happens. So I can't get too excited about that. I will say that I am very excited about Ahsoka. The trailer for Ahsoka was amazing. The elements that are coming, they're coming up in Ahsoka, the fact that Thrawn is around, some of the themes that show seems to be centered around, the fact that it is going to be a Dave Filoni series, and he basically loves Ahsoka because Ahsoka is his creation. I think all of those things point to Ahsoka being a really solid series. Better than Kenobi, probably equal with Mandalorian Season 1 and Mandalorian Season 2. I'm sure we're going to get some cameos worked in there as well. I think it'll be far better than Book of Boba Fett. So I'm excited about that. I'm not that excited about Acolyte because Acolyte has a lot of behind the scenes things that are going on. One of the producers of that film or of that series is suing Lucasfilm right now. Leslie Headland's interview at Celebration I thought was awkward. One of the things about Celebration that I thought was really strange is that none of the people answering questions seemed to be prepped for the questions they were answering, which to me feels like it would be insane. If I was Kathleen Kennedy, one of the first questions that the host, who I think was doing a really good job, asked Kathleen Kennedy was a question that Kathleen Kennedy had to like stop and be like, what are you asking me? And that is crazy. If I was Kathleen Kennedy, I'd be like, I'm not going on this stage unless I'm prepped to talk about stuff in a way that the fans will find compelling. So like, give me the questions ahead of time. So I thought that was kind of weird. But like Leslie Headland's interview, I thought was very awkward. And because of some of the reports about what could be happening behind the scenes with that show, I have no confidence in that show at all. Now, does that am I saying it's going to be bad? No. I mean, well, you don't know until you actually see the show and see where they went with it. But I just don't have a high degree of confidence in it personally. I am enjoying. I think Mandalorian has been okay to sometimes less than okay in season 3. But I think that the last episode that we got this last week, which was the penultimate episode, this is the one before the finale, that episode was fantastic. It was a 9 out of 10. I do think it was a little bit it's a little bit of a shame that they waited till the penultimate episode to kind of complete some of the teases that they left in episodes 1 through 6. I think that some of those things could have come earlier in the season and it would have kept fans like me more excited about the season overall, but the season kind of lost its way in the middle of the season there. Even the early episodes were not my favorite. So I'm not sure what happened there. I think what happened there is that Favreau is probably writing that series too quickly. I think that also that series has taken on a Clone Wars feel as opposed to a Mandalorian feel. Mandalorian felt like in the first season that the concept of the show was to have like a gunslinger type series where the gunslinger would travel to different planets and help solve problems. And then there was this overarching story that he was sort of involved in, sort of not involved in, and all of those things coalesced into one story at the end. Season 2 then started bringing in a lot of other things that I thought made that premise of this Western storyline sort of awkward. And then season 3, so season 2 is like the transition period between like, here we have a Western. Season 2 is like, no, we have sort of a Western, but it's also sort of leading us into this territory where it looks more like the Clone Wars. What I mean by that is it looks like a series that is meant to fill in the gaps around the films, specifically the gap between the original trilogy and the sequel trilogy, and how do we get from one to the other. That's basically what The Mandalorian feels like now, and I don't think that's as compelling to me as the lone gunslinger type of story, but it's obvious that the Mandalorian is the most successful property across the board for Lucasfilm. So here's what I think happened. You had Favreau come in and say, this is season 1 of The Mandalorian. It's a lone gunslinger series Western. Season 2 comes in and Dave Filoni gets even more involved, and it looks like it's like, well, let's fill in the gaps and also have it be a little bit of a lone gunslinger Western. And then season 3 comes, you know, get Boba Fett, obviously, and Kenobi. And then season 3 comes along with those two shows behind it and Andor behind it, and they go, actually, let's use it as a gap filler between the original trilogy and the sequel trilogy. And then all of a sudden it loses its way because no longer is it about the lone gunslinger. Now it's more about Bo-Katan. Now it's more about what's going on with the Mandalorian population in general. And all of a sudden it no longer feels like the initial show that it set out to be. So, you know, that doesn't mean that it's the end of the world. It just means that it was a show that I preferred the premise and the theme and the tone and the genre over to a show that I don't prefer the premise, theme, or genre over. And so that's fine. That's not a big deal, but it also means that, you know, I'm not as excited about it as I could have been. Now, fans of the Clone Wars probably are even more excited about it, and that's great.
But before I get ahead of myself, I don't want to just heap praise on the Mandalorian, because this is all about Star Wars in general, man. Don't sleep. Don't get it twisted. We're talking about more than just Mando. This season of Bad Batch has been a real masterclass in continually referencing parts of the galaxy that you thought may have been forgotten or even insignificant. And then also, we lost a lot. You know, the team, you know, of course, the team doesn't have goggles no more. Echo, you know, is in, you know, he's kind of been in and out. Then, of course, dealing with the attack from essentially the Empire being like, oh, not only is the Bad Batch still here, but we want to get Omega because we need Omega to essentially force Nala Se to do what we want her to do. You know what I'm saying? And we see the cloning and everything in that show kind of aligning with whatever's going on with Moff Gideon and the other Shadow Council's cloning techniques, which is with the whole Project Necromancer, which is most likely about bringing the Emperor back or cloning the Emperor, because I believe in Bad Batch it's being done to find a way to clone the Emperor, because I think the Emperor is like, look, just in case, you know what I'm saying? Just in case y'all, you know, some funny style happened, I want to make sure my body eye. And in, of course, in Mandalorian, they're like, yo, he dead, but we need, you know, that Emperor back. We need to show that we still strong. But coming from Mandalorian, where we have this animation that reminds us so much of the nostalgia of when Clone Wars was holding it down on Friday nights on Cartoon Network. But getting that in such a beautiful 4K, high def, whatever, as well as top-notch storytelling, dealing with like real, you know, soldier PTSD, loss, and even some love in there. Because there's a moment where, you know, Tech definitely, he definitely has a moment with, I can't remember the character, Wanda Sykes's character. He definitely has a short moment, but I don't, you know, him not being able to articulate it, you know what I'm saying? Because he is who he is. Even the situation with Omega when, Echo had just left the team and him trying to figure out how to convey his feelings about the situation. Because, I mean, of course, you know, Omega isn't the only one that lost somebody. They're feeling the loss too. But them trying to push on without that is what created a lot of tension. But within that tension, you get some great action, some great storytelling. And one of the action set pieces that I'll talk about on this one is in the... Was it the finale or was it the penultimate? It might have been the finale. And in the particular episode, when they're like locked on that like zip cord line or whatever, the rail line that was on the zip cord or whatever, that was high stakes. And for a moment, I thought, hey, maybe Tech might make it. You know what I'm saying? But the more and more that scene went on, I was like, yo, we gonna lose Tech? And even in that episode, seeing where we have the Bad Batch, who definitely is no friend to the Empire, but then saw Guerrera, who is also no friend to the Empire, but seeing how both of them have their own issues to deal with, and Hunter being like, yo, man, look, you can't blow this place up. We trying to get information. And Saul looked like, hey, I don't care. We're never going to have all these people in the same place. So I don't care what y'all trying to do. This is more important. And honestly, I don't know. I mean, finding out where, well, technically, Hunter and the crew didn't know really the, I guess, the extent of the whole cloning thing. They just knew that Crosshair was in trouble. You know what I'm saying? And they're like, yo, we got to go help Crosshair. But them finding out the clone thing could really move towards kind of assisting the rebellion in general. But on Saw's end, destroying this this installation and killing all of these guys in one fell swoop is a huge deal. Like, and it can't be understated how, I don't know, how powerful a blow that would be. Now, we don't know what the repercussions of that would be, but that would be a huge, like a huge blow dealt to the Empire. So I might actually side with Saw Gerrera on that one because of how valuable those targets are. Now, flipping back over real quick to the young keys, the chillins, if you will, I gotta say that the Disney Junior nature of Young Jedi Adventures is not only cute, but a welcome change of pace. You know, there's something that you can watch that's light. I will ask one question. How old is Nash? Because if these are Young Jedi Adventures and Nash is their friend, and we're assuming that these younglings are like, I don't know, what, 6, 7, something like that. How is Nash flying her own ship? And who gave her the ship? All right, now, okay. Who gave her the ship? Who taught her how to fly? And do you need a license for like ship piloting? Don't you have to go through like classes? And if you do have to go through classes, how did she go through those classes? Or is this a joyriding my dad's ship kind of situation? Or is this just Disney Junior, and maybe I shouldn't ask any questions? Oh man. All jokes aside, man, Star Wars, I'm having a lot of fun watching it. Grief Karga, dealing with Nevarro in general, dealing with the Mandalorians, seeing Din Djarin address Bo-Katan in the way that he did. I mean, talking about, you know, like, your song is not yet sung, but yo, I mean, he basically said everything but I love you in that joint. That was like Mandalorian version of I love you. I ain't gonna front. Like, he definitely did that. You know what I'm saying? He held it down. Now, I can't go any further without saying, yo, my boy, Baby Yoda, aka Grogu, he got his own ride, y'all. He got his own ride. He looking good. He looking fresh. He looking clean. He looking all right. it was a great opportunity for a joke, and a joke that I think could almost went too long, but I'm with him having his own mode of transportation and able to, you know, having full range of motion, having the ability to kind of get around as fast as everyone else, instead of just always using the kind of hover cube or whatever, kind of like the Professor X cube or the Professor X orb. And when the two, when Paz Vizsla and the other guy were fighting on the ship, I do like how he jumped in between them. And even though he was just saying no, 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 it was very clear, kind of like his emotion in that moment. And it went from being something that was a gag to something that was very powerful, because him continually saying no, 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 it's kind of like driving the point, like, no, we are here to unite. We are here to take back Mandalore. We are here to continue on our tradition, continue on our race, continue on our people, our planet, to rejuvenate this, to bring life back. Like, what are you doing? Can you put down this petty squabble for 2 seconds, you two boneheaded idiots? But I loved it, and I truly think that Baby Yoda, aka Grogu, is going to come into his own in a very real way in this finale. I don't know how long this finale is going to be. I hope we get a double episode. I don't think we will, but I would love to get, you know, like a hour and a half finale or a 2 hour finale. More Mando for me, please. But I think the way Mando saved Grogu in the last season is how Grogu is going to save Mando in this season. Also, I think maybe, just maybe, we might see the Mythosaur. Maybe. Again. We might see it again. Just one more time. Because, okay, if the Mythosaur is this very important creature, sort of steeped in Mandalorian lore and story and livelihood and essentially part of their complete mythos and something that they revere, I'd say heavily. I mean, they put that kind of like symbol on everything. I would say that maybe the Mythosaur might feel maybe unease or unrest in the planet with the Empire being there. And maybe that Mythosaur might do something. Maybe not. Maybe I'm crazy. You know what I'm saying? I will say one thing. When I was watching the last episode, when they were running down the hallway, I was like, hold on. I was like, where are they going? I was like, don't follow them yet. Because I was like, if there's this many of them, where do they come from? And sometimes you may be chasing a bee back to the nest. You know what I'm saying? Or you know what I'm saying? You might be chasing a bee back to the hive. And unfortunately, like almost right when the words came out of my mouth, I was watching it with my wife. And almost when the words came out of my mouth, I was like, oh, snap, it's a trap. So
one thing that I do want to do is go back and revisit Rebels. I did not watch all of Rebels, so I want to watch more of Rebels. I have not watched The Bad Batch. I've watched most of The Clone Wars. I love animated stuff, but I don't love all animated stuff. So I'm not like just like, I'm an animation fan and I'll watch any sort of animation. I basically, at this point, just like to watch whatever the best of the best shows exist, because there's so many good shows that I tend to be a little bit picky with what I choose to watch. The Clone Wars, to me, had the last four episodes of The Clone Wars are some of the best Star Wars that I think that we've seen. However, at the same time, there's a lot of what I would call junk in The Clone Wars that I have no interest in at all. I don't think they're very good. So I dropped out of Rebels, but I've heard that the later seasons of Rebels get better and better. So I am going to jump back into Rebels and watch some of those. And I'm hearing really good things from The Bad Batch as well, from people that I trust. So I'll probably get into The Bad Batch at some point in time. But with so much good television, it's very, very difficult to watch all of the things. Because at the end of the day, I am a fan of great stories first and a Star Wars fan second. In fact, a fan of great stories first, followed by a fan of Indiana Jones second, followed by Star Wars third. And so it's hard to catch up on all the Star Wars things. And I do have some concerns over the franchise storytelling model in general, because we've kind of seen that falter a little bit on the Marvel side, in my opinion, in Phase 4. Phase 4 was a little on the rougher side. Some of that was, again, because the creators were pressured into making shows for television, when in the past, Feige has been really a movie guy. And so just like Kathleen Kennedy, he's been forced into doing TV shows. Now, what's interesting about Feige is that several of his TV shows were fantastic. And then several of them I didn't get into as much. I didn't like them as much. And so at least it's kind of similar on the Kathleen Kennedy side as the Feige as it relates to TV. And then I think that Star Wars basically stopped doing movies, and then Marvel's kept doing movies, but those movies were sort of okay. They're not, they're decent, but they're, I didn't like Thor Love and Thunder at all. I thought it was a giant mess. And Taika Waititi is one of my favorite filmmakers because Jojo Rabbit's one of the best movies I've seen in the last decade. It's one of the best movies of all time, honestly. If you haven't seen Jojo Rabbit, you have to go watch it because it is phenomenal. But it felt to me like, it feels to me like Marvel, like Star Wars basically said, we don't have enough time to do all these things, so tell us what your priority is. And they said TV. And so you're, okay, cool, we'll do TV. But it's movie people making TV. With Marvel, what it seemed like is they said, okay, make more stuff. We will make more stuff. And then that stuff has lacked quality because of that. So I'm not sure. I think where Disney is at right now is I think that Disney has realized that, well, I'm hoping this is what Disney's realized. From what we can tell from Bob Iger, I think that Star Wars, or Disney in general, has realized that it is no longer making films for the general audience. It has sort of shifted a little bit too much to making films for specific kinds of viewpoints. And I think that Disney is sort of trying to moderate the way that their properties are talked about. Now, how does that affect the general fan? Probably not at all. But if you fall into a camp where you're like, well, I really love some of the ways that Disney's worked in political messages into their films, then you could be disappointed with a slight shift back toward the middle. Let's face it, they're never going to go right. They're going to try to steer clear of going full left as well. They're going to, because they can sell more tickets if they don't get involved in either of those groups. And they're being pressured like crazy because of the culture war right now to be in either group. Florida's pressuring them to be in the conservative group. California is pressuring them to be in the progressive group. The rest of the country is probably a little bit more tired of the culture war, and we're finding ourselves in this very awkward stage where Disney's trying to figure out what it wants to do and what it wants to be. So I think that Star Wars is going to find itself in that same position, because Star Wars, of all the properties, was one of the properties that was perceptively, whether true or not, I think it's true, but you know, you might disagree, but was pushing the boundaries of moving towards more and more progressive kind of thinking. And not just, I don't just say that in the means of the shows, because like Andor is my favorite Star Wars thing that's ever been produced. I love Andor. When I say I love great stories and then I love Star Wars and Indiana Jones, like Andor is both. Like, it's a great story and it's Star Wars. And you know, Andor is a message about what it takes to fight for freedom and what that turns you into potentially when you fight for freedom. Well, in interviews, some of the cast members blatantly said this is an anti-Trump show. Now, you know, whether or not you like that or dislike that, it's a bad political stance to take if you're Disney. You don't really want your cast members saying we are against Trump, because you've cut out like 25% of the population that could buy tickets to your movies or buy Disney Plus and watch your shows. So you don't really want them saying that. What you want is the content to speak for itself, for it to be about freedom and to be about fighting for freedom and making sure that we don't turn into the evil that we're trying to avoid.
I love Bad Batch. I love Mando. Young Jedi is cute. I'm excited for Ahsoka. I mean, for the most part, even with the movies, I know there's one character that has been announced that a lot of people are not feeling, but I will say that even with the character that I'm sure people are not feeling, which is going to be Rey, which I've seen some moans and groans about it, let's remember that this is now a movie where it seems that Lucasfilm has more of a handle on a plan, and this is going to be set 15 years after, so they're not going to have to be as strongly tied to, you know, The Last Jedi, The Last Jedi, Force Awakens, you know, Poe Dameron, any of those characters. I don't know if I would be the first to say we should bring Rey back, but with a 15-year jump, let's see. You know what I'm saying? Maybe. Let's see a trailer and you know, change my mind. Make me feel good about this one. The one where we're going all the way back with the like beginning of a Jedi, I'm chilling with that. I'm cool with that. And of course, a movie that kind of wraps up this Mando, Boba Fett, Ahsoka type timeline, I'm definitely in with that too. You know what I'm saying? I'm definitely in with that. Especially since we're talking about bringing Thrawn up in this piece, you got to let me know what goes on with Thrawn. Also, side note, before I get out of here, I think Thrawn is going to kill Moff Gideon. I'm almost perfectly sure. You know what? Mark my word on that. Now, if I'm wrong, maybe I was tripping, but I think he's going
to
kill him.
I don't know. It's weird to see where Disney is at right now. I think all of us could benefit from a moderation of a lot of different kinds of entertainment and have better conversations as opposed to yelling at each other from two political ideologies. I think that's not very helpful at all. It's much better for us to come together and have a conversation about what do these stories mean and what does freedom look like, whether you fall on the right or the left. What does freedom look like? What should it look like? And how should we pursue freedom together? So there's some of my Star Wars takes. Really excited about Ahsoka. I think Ahsoka is going to be awesome. Can't wait for Andor season 2 because Andor is my favorite. Mandalorian is starting to improve this week, which I like a lot. I'm not confident in the Acolyte, and I don't think we'll see any of the films that were announced at Star Wars Celebration. So we'll see if any of my predictions are right or wrong, but let me know your thoughts in the comments down below. Thanks.
Witness it. NERD, SOUL, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, podcast, all that jazz. Thank you for listening. Thank you for coming through. Thank you, Jay Shearer, for always coming through and talking some Star Wars because it's always fun. And until next time, until the next Force Awakening, until the next Baby Yoda, until the next Mandalorian ambush, this is for us to you saying peace.